And welcome into another edition of the B Squared Podcast. It is Tuesday, May 2nd, 2017, and the Cubs are okay. At least we have the Bears, right? Never mind. He's Brian Beto. I'm Jordan Bernfield. Glad to have you along. Beto, the Cubs are not doing badly, but they're not doing real well either. And obviously, we're spoiled after last year. They started 25-6. We knew that wouldn't be the case, but I also think that we didn't expect them to be 13-12 through 25 games.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And yeah, there you look at the standings, and they're right at the top, which we did predict, but we didn't predict that record to be at 13-12, just one game above 500. And you know, and a lot of things contribute to that, and I'm sure we'll get into a bunch of those here. They had a difficult schedule to begin the season, some winnable games as of late, but they've continually fall behind early. They're not getting great performances or even good performances from most of their starters. Their bullpen has started to pick it up, but it hasn't been all that great altogether. Inconsistent offensive performance, and you combine all that, and you have just slightly over 500 team. But like you said, they weren't going to replicate last year's April. Hopefully, they'll start to turn the corner here, and as the weather warms up, hopefully they'll start to warm up as well.
In the last 12 games, Beto, the Cubs' starting pitching has a 6.92 ERA. Now, obviously, I wouldn't expect that to continue. Through the first 12 or 13 games, they had a 2.56 starting pitcher collective ERA. So, obviously, that's more in line with the kind of pitching we're used to seeing from this staff. But what is the biggest concern, in your opinion, through these first 25 games?
I think it aligns with what we've kind of seen, you know, on social media and different reports out there. And I think it is the starting pitching to an extent. And let me preface by saying I'm not like terrified, like I'm not going off the deep end. I think there is, I guess, there's a fair assessment out there that is worried about the starting pitching, the velocity drop, in particular Kyle Hendricks. Not that he's going to blow you away with his fastball, but the importance of his fastball being at a certain velocity really is the fact that it separates his, you know, the miles per hour from his changeups and the difference between those two pitches. And as a result, his location's been off as well. I think you just need to see more from Arrieta and Lester. I'm not overly concerned with their lack of velocity. Usually it's April and the Cubs starters were slower to get into it, even in spring training, and figured that their velocity would increase throughout the course of the first few months of the season. John Lackey, he's a back end of the rotation guy at this point, a 3 or 4 starter. And then Brett Anderson, a guy who's been really inconsistent. I don't want to say I'm concerned about him. And we've talked about this, you know, off and on this podcast, that we look at Brett Anderson as a guy that hasn't been able to stay healthy throughout his career. He's an extreme ground ball pitcher in theory, which bodes well for the Cubs' electric defense. But I don't think the Cubs are counting on him to make 33 starts. I think we look at him as a guy that they were hoping to get to June or late June or July into, and then look at the trade market for a young controllable starter. And I still think that's the plan. So I'm not overly concerned about him. I think they're just going to ride him out, but you're not going to get spoiled like you were last year with all 5 guys throwing a quality start pretty much every time out there.
Yeah, I agree. But here's my biggest sort of concern so far, that you have a team that last year not only won the World Series, but played to Game 7 of the World Series. So they literally played to the last day possible in the Major League season. And last year, the starting pitching was so brilliant and so good. And obviously, everything was great last year. I mean, they were an amazing team. But when you've got a pitching staff that is a little bit older, I mean, they're not an old pitching staff, but, you know, you have 3 starters that are over 30. You wonder if that long of a season is going to have an effect on the following year. And that was something that you and I had talked about going into the year, that it would be realistic to expect a little bit of a regression because the Cubs were so unbelievable at the beginning of the year. But also, we weren't really sure how the starting pitchers were going to respond after such a long year. And my concern is not that I'm not worried about John Lester or Jake Arrieta. I agree with you. I think they're both going to be fine. The only thing that I worry with respect to those guys or anyone else on the staff is after you play a season that is abnormally long, do guys get a little bit more tired? Is there a little bit less zip on the pitches than there might have been at this time last year? And will that be something that wears on them as the season continues? And I think that's even true of the guys in this lineup. You know, when you play as long as they did last year, it's sort of like, you know, how we always talk about with the Blackhawks that after they've won the cup, it's so hard to get back and win another one because of how much energy is exerted to win a championship. And listen, we haven't seen a repeat champion in the National League since, what, the 70s? So, I mean, we're talking about a long time since it's happened. And, you know, the Cubs are certainly a young team that has the ability to get back there. But I guess that's where my greatest concern is. Not that these guys aren't still great players. I think they are. And I believe that over the course of the year, they will show that they are, even though they really kind of haven't through the first 25 games. But how much will winning affect the longevity of tip-top performance in 2017? I just don't know. And that is the one thing that does kind of concern me.
Yeah, and it's a fair thing to wonder. I would say the one thing to try and justify the slow start by some of those guys, I know we've highlighted the pitchers, the starting pitchers mostly, but you look at spring training is really long, and most teams get started in mid-February, and they're trying to determine who's going to be on their opening day roster and get their arms and bats ready for April 1st or whatever opening day is. Not that the Cubs were ill-prepared in that manner, but I felt like they started the process a little bit later due to the reason you just said as far as playing into November last year and the amount of innings some of these guys threw throughout the course of last season. So as a result, I think that's contributed to the lower velocity and the lack of command at times is they're just not there. I don't want to say it's spring training for them yet, but that's used to build up arm strength and command and consistency. And I feel like they got off the ground a little bit later, knowing they could get away with it with the amount of talent they have, and that was going to better them long term. Maybe that's not the case, but it's certainly a thing that I think you can think about and talk about and be an option as to why they're struggling. I think if this goes on for another few weeks, then that argument kind of goes out the window. But I'm holding out hope that that's a reason or a justification as to why we've seen some of the slower starts, especially in the rotation that we have so far.
Very fair point. When you look at Kyle Schwarber in the leadoff spot, Beto, one of the things that I think that some people forget is that Kyle Schwarber has not yet played a full major league season, even though
400 plate appearances.
Right,
that's it.
Right.
That's
even though this guy is already a Cubs legend, he is already a Cubs legend. If he never plays another game with the team, he's a Cubs legend. But, you know, he's very young in his career. I have 2 points on Kyle Schwarber. The first is, I know that it upsets the normal baseball thought process for people an older generation than us. And, you know, we're two guys in our early 30s. And for a lot of people of an older generation, they look at a guy who is built like Kyle Schwarber and they look at the power potential of a guy like Kyle Schwarber and they say, can't be leadoff man, doesn't compute. That's not how I learned baseball sensibilities. So I understand why there are a lot of people discussing Kyle Schwarber in the leadoff spot. To me, you and I talked about it. I thought it was weird at first. I get why they're doing it. It's metrically driven and he is getting on base. But do you think it matters to his performance that he is not, you know, that he's batting leadoff and not performing particularly well at this point from an offensive standpoint? And two, do you think that maybe the league is figuring him out a little bit, sort of like a rookie, and that, you know, it's going to be a readjustment period for Schwarber as we move along? Or do you think he's just off to a slow start? I mean, how would you, I guess, kind of explain Kyle Schwarber's slow April combined with the fact that he's, you know, batting in a spot that he's never hit in before?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of the things you mentioned. I would think that the spot and the order is in theory, at least in my opinion, is the least of the concern. I think it goes to the, you know, he had a slow month. It happens. It's April. Guys get off the slow starts.
Fire Schwarber.
Yeah, I know last year, I think if I'm not mistaken, Anthony Rizzo got off to a really bad start batting average wise. And, you know, Schwarber's walk rate is there. His slugging's obviously down due to the fact that his batting average is so low. But yeah, there's always that part, that factor that you just mentioned of the hot prospect comes out and just crushes it out of the gate, and then pitchers get more tape on him. They get an understanding of maybe areas they can get this specific hitter out, and then they execute. And then it's up to the hitter to counter adjust. And maybe we're in that period where Schwarber's starting to figure it out. The good news is that he's an incredibly gifted hitter and an incredibly gifted offensive player. So I'm not really worried about him coming out of it. But yeah, like you said, people forget that, yeah, this is technically his third season, but he's only had 400 or so plate appearances, which if he played every day, he would get roughly 600 throughout the course of one season. So he's still getting the at-bats. And not only that, he barely had a lot of minor league at-bats because he was up so quickly. So this is a guy that's had very few professional at-bats. I'm not worried about him in the leadoff spot. Maybe they do try something else different down the line, but I don't attribute that to his struggles over the last few weeks.
Yeah, I think that's all fair. I'm not really worried about it, but it is sort of one of the things that's been talked about with the team. Early in the year, too, Beto, we saw the bullpen really struggle. Mm-hmm. And really, I mean, Monday night's game was awful. Besides the fact that the weather was awful, the game, I mean, let's just throw that one out. I was there. I sat through the rain. My buddy Danny and I were there. If it wasn't for him, I would have left the game well before it started. But I wanted to take one for the team, take one for him, who got to go to the game with, and, you know, he doesn't get to go to a lot of games, and I'm fortunate that I get to go to games, and so maybe I take it less seriously. But I just was like, I want to get the hell out of there, and Brett Anderson convinced me that I should get the hell out of there with that performance.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
That's a tangent. What I was trying to say is the bullpen prior to Monday night's game and the Sunday night game in Fenway had gone 17 consecutive innings without allowing a run. So the bullpen has been pretty good of late, which mm-hmm. I have liked seeing. And I actually think that we're starting to see that the questions are being answered about this bullpen and that they're not as bad as they were early on in the year. So I'm less concerned about that. I am, though, a little bit puzzled. I'm not concerned, but I'm puzzled why the Cubs defense has not been very good so far this year. Because that was one thing that last year you never worried about. I mean, they had a couple of games where they threw the ball around, but all but about four games, they were unbelievable defensively. And while maybe you couldn't expect them to be historically great again defensively, you at least figured they weren't going to make dumb plays. Like, I thought Sunday night, you know, Pedro Strop, I thought, pitched pretty well. But then, you know, Russell makes the bad throw to first base. It costs him two more runs. The game effectively ends at that point. We just mm-hmm. didn't see that stuff last year. And so far, I think we've seen some just kind of spotty, bad defense at times that we didn't see.
Yeah, and this is something we kind of addressed on the last podcast, and I agree. It seems like there's these one-off plays that are going to happen throughout the course of the season, but it just seems like they're happening a little more frequently at the outset of this year than we saw last year, and at inopportune times on top of it. There's been a couple of times where the Cubs have been right there or within a run, and they've made a stupid mistake on defense that's opened the door. As you talked about the Russell play, I'm thinking what pops into my head is that drop third strike where Wilson Contreras just kind of lazily threw over to first base, and that brought in an insurance run on a drop third strike. And there's been a couple of different situations. The good news, again, though, is that they're so talented defensively, and then you couple that in with what we've seen with Albert Almora Jr. in center field and what he brings to the table defensively, and whether Hayward's in center and right, that, again, they'll figure it out. But yeah, there's been some plays that have been puzzling, like you said, as far as what they've done, and at the timing also hasn't been very good. So and that's an area that, even though, like, even during that stretch, I felt like, and maybe I'm off base here because I don't have evidence to support this, but that stretch right before the All-Star break when they really struggled, it didn't seem like that carried over the defensive side of the baseball either.
No, you know, so far this year, it's been weird. It's just weird to see because we're just not used to seeing the Cubs.
You've been spoiled, right?
Yeah, we've been really, well, honestly, that's what it is. We've been really spoiled. And, you know, listen, it's better to be this way than the other way. I also have to say that having watched the Cubs start 13-12, the fact that they won the World Series last year makes this 9 billion times easier. I was thinking about this earlier today. If they had lost to the Indians in the World Series last year, you and I would be on a rational anger highway for the first 25 games. We would have been screaming our heads off. We would have been just going nuts. But the fact that they won takes so much out of this, right? I mean, I'm sitting there freezing my you-know-what off last night while Brett Anderson is getting the crap beat out of him. And I'm just sort of like, besides the fact that I'm freezing and getting increasingly soaked, I was just kind of like, whatever. I was kind of laughing. And if this had happened last, if they had not won last year, and I was sitting there last night and was subjected to that performance, I would have been like throwing my beer. I would have been so upset.
If Michael Martinez hits a walk-off home run in the bottom of the 10th in Game 7, and the Cubs started 13-12 this year, I'd probably be in a ditch somewhere. I'm just being honest with you. I'm more thankful for my wife and child than I am for myself that's not the case, because they would just not want to be around me, because I'd be the same way. I'd be like, I would have tortured myself. And when I got home last night and just stayed up late to watch them lose 10-2 just to torture myself.
And instead, you got to enjoy your night last night and not watch the game.
And I'm not worried. Yeah, exactly. And I wasn't really worried about it. Yeah, of course I want him to win, but now it's this weird, like, we're going to figure it out. We'll be all right. You know, we won last year, and there's a little bit of a honeymoon phase maybe going on and some other things going on. But, you know, at the end of the day, they're still top of the division. They're the best team in their division in theory, and we'll figure it out. It's just it's a totally different mindset, and I think it's going to add years back to my life because of it.
I agree. I will say this, that – one of the things that I think the Cubs have suffered from early in the year is that they are a prisoner of last year's success. Much the way you and I discussed last year, how Jake Arrieta was a prisoner of his 2015 success in 2016. It was like, no matter what Jake Arrieta did, unless he went 8 innings and allowed no runs and struck out 12, Cub fans interpreted that start as he was bad. Now, he's had a couple of actually bad starts so far this year. The 5 runs in the first at Fenway on Friday, there's no other way to slice it than that's just a bad outing. But I think that the Cubs are suffering from the same thing so far this year. The reality is, in baseball, most good teams that win the division basically play 500 ball for most of the year. They go on one hot stretch, and that's what allows them to finish 20 or 25 games over 500, and that's why they win the division and they go on to the playoffs. The Cubs last year had that streak to start the year, and then they had another one in August. But that's what made last year so magical, that they basically won the division by this time last year. And so we just assumed, I think, going into this year, oh, well, the Cubs will just start out, you know, they'll be 18-7 at this point, and they'll just blow everybody away. Well, that's just not how it goes most of the time. So I feel like if the Cubs had started the year, you know, 18-6, let's say, and then they went 13-12 in the month of May, for instance, nobody would have batted an eye at that. But the fact that they started the year 13-12, it's like we're all questioning whether they're that good, when I just assume that this is small sample size.
Yeah, 100%. And it's funny, too, is that I remember they were like 6-4 at some point, and I remember thinking, like, my gosh, like, this is a rough start. And if they won 6 out of every 10 games, they'd win 97 games. It's just funny how it works out. And let's say they win the next 2 or 3 in a row. Let's say they take the next 3 from the Phillies. You're looking at 16-12, and all of a sudden a team that is built to win over 90 games again, just like that.
Yeah.
So it's just funny how it works. And you're right. We just assumed they would get off to this crazy good start like they did last year. And the reality is, it's just difficult to do. Whether it is, you know, kind of a mental, like, honeymoon sort of thing, or there's some other things that underlying themes that with the velocity and some more technical things going on there. However, they're right there, and they're going to make improvements likely to this team throughout the course of the year, especially when we get closer to trade season. The bottom line is that they know they're good enough to potentially sacrifice a couple of early season wins in order to stay sharp as we get into the fall months, and not many baseball teams have that luxury. Are they a lock to win the division? Certainly not. However, there's so much confidence in the talent level, like to an extent, and it's not at this level, but it reminds me a little bit of the NBA. If they did rest some of their guys in spring training and they are willing to sacrifice some wins, it reminds me a little bit of the NBA. You have guys that sit out from time to time throughout the course of the season. They know they need to be fresh when May and June comes because they know they're going to be there in May and June. And I think the Cubs have the luxury of being able to think about the talent level they had and want to make sure that they're going to be there for the stretch run and they're healthy and they're at full strength and they maximize their roster efficiency.
How quickly do you think the Cubs are going to make a trade for a starting pitcher? I have a feeling Brett Anderson's not going to be in the rotation in August.
I would say it's more likely, in my opinion, that he's not in the rotation in August, whether that be if he really struggles and they try Mike Montgomery or if, and I don't want to write him off after two or three bad starts.
By the way, he's a great Twitter guy.
He's a great Twitter guy.
He's hysterical on Twitter. I want to love him. I really do.
Yeah.
This is nothing against him. He's just pitched like, you know, not, he's been bad. I mean, he's not been good.
And I think it's just not that necessarily realistic to expect someone who's had some bad fortune from an injury perspective to just walk in and make 32 starts.
No.
It's just tough to expect that of him. So even if he is healthy, they brought him in to be a fifth starter. Like I said, I think they brought him in to make 15 starts and then decide whether or not there's a young, controllable starter that makes sense to try to acquire and package some of your good young prospects, potentially a major leaguer, to fill that void, not only as the fifth starter this year, but as a guy that they look at moving forward with potential departure of Arrieta, John Lackey at the end of his career as well. So I think I'm fine with, I don't want to see Brett Anderson light the mound on fire and turn into like Thomas Diamond or some Casey Coleman or some random early 2010-ish type of pitchers. But at the same time, I think the Cubs, like it goes back to the argument, I think they know they can get away with having a subpar tail end of the rotation for the first 2.5-3 months of the year, and a guy like Brett Anderson, who's to say he's going to be subpar? He's had a couple of bad starts, but he's got good stuff. He's got a high ground ball rate throughout his career. If he stays healthy, maybe he turns into a decent pitcher.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, listen, I'm not trying to write the guy off yet. I just haven't been impressed with what I've seen because he struggled with his command consistently, mm-hmm. and that's been something that, while I understand the metrics, I get why they signed him. I don't think it was a bad signing. I just haven't seen him show good command really in any start. I mean, even the game last week in Pittsburgh, he walked six guys. They scored 10 runs in the first two innings. It didn't make a difference to the result of the game. But even Brett after the game was joking on Twitter, "I walked six guys. I fell down on the mound." Like, it's funny when you win the game, you know, 13-1 or whatever that game was. It's not as funny when you give up seven runs in the first two innings and your team is out of the game. So
yeah, the Phillies.
Yeah, huge powerhouse. I mean, listen, I want to like Brett Anderson, and I think I will like Brett Anderson because I think he is going to be better. It's just not been a good start for him. I mean, there's really no other way to put it. I mean, there's really been one start where he was pretty good, but he's battled in every other start. And so we'll see. I mean, I don't want to write him off yet. I don't think it was a bad signing. I just think so far I haven't been, frankly, overly impressed with what I've seen from him. So we'll see how he performs. But then again, we knew that April was going to be a little more of a difficult month for the Cubs, at least schedule-wise. The Brewers are playing a little bit better than I anticipated because Eric Thames is all of a sudden, you know, second coming of Babe Ruth. And
it's my fantasy teams, by the way. Thank you very much.
Heck of a job there. I really like the Eric Thames story. I just hope that the Cubs are up 10 games and I can enjoy it more when the Brewers are out of the picture. But if the Brewers are in the picture, I'm going to like the story a lot less. But I like what I've seen so far from him, and I think Milwaukee's a little bit surprising. The other teams in the division haven't played all that well yet, which I'm a tad bit surprised, I guess, that St. Louis and Pittsburgh aren't a little bit better. So we'll see. I don't think either of us are pressing the panic button, but I think that the way that the schedule sets up, the month of May, you know, is going to, there's some challenges in the month of May, Certainly. And, you know, after this Philly series, you got the Yankees coming in who have played really well so far. They have a series in Colorado coming up, and the Rockies have had a surprisingly really good start. San Francisco has been awful so far this year, but I would imagine that that's not going to be the easiest series at the end of the month, and then they go to LA and San Diego. So, you know, it's another month with some challenges in it, but I also think that there's plenty of games in this coming month where the Cubs can fatten up a little bit. They've got a homestand against Cincinnati and Milwaukee, which if they're playing the way they should, you know, I think that they should be able to win a decent number of those games. So on that note, Brian Beto, are you predicting a sweep for the rest of the week, or how are we prognosticating here?
So we're gonna win the next three from the Phillies, because that's just happening.
The next two from the Phillies, unless they're adding another game.
No, don't they play Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday?
Oh, you're week? Right. You're right. That's right. Okay. I'm looking at the wrong thing on the schedule. You're right. They have three more. So they're taking all three, right?
All three from the Phillies, and then we're gonna go back to the 2003 Cubs Yankees series at Wrigley Field, which is one of my favorite all time regular season Cubs.
Eric Caro's home run off of Roger Clemens in the bid for 300.
Incredible game. Kerry Wood pitched very well.
I was at that game.
Well, I was at the game the next night.
The Sunday nighter.
Yes, the Sunday nighter. I got a Dusty Baker threw me his wristband, and the Cubs won.
That's amazing.
Picked a guy off.
Yep.
To end the game. I think Alou homered, Barrett homered maybe in that game, and I think Raul Mondesi homered for the Yankees, but I sat in the dugouts. It was the day after I graduated high school, and it was the coolest in-viewing experience, seats I've ever had at a sporting event. So I think the Cubs are still bitter about that Friday afternoon loss to the Yankees in 2003, so fair. I think they're going to come out smoking, and this time they get the sweep. They win on Friday, and then win on Saturday and Sunday, and they sweep the Yankees. So 6-0 the rest of the week for the Cubs. I know we don't have too much time to talk about it, but two quick positives. We've talked about some of the areas of, I don't want to say concern, but things that haven't gone so well. Jason Hayward looking really strong at the plate.
Love the way Jay Hayes looked.
His career numbers, and maybe even a little bit better. And we talked a little bit about the bullpen and settling in roles. Hector Rondon has looked pretty darn good as of late, settling back into that eighth inning guy. So really excited about those two things. And they help carry the Cubs to a 6-0 record the rest of the week.
Love it, Beto. Love it. I'm going to say that the Cubs win two of the next three against the Phillies, and then they take two out of three from the New York Yankees. I know that New York has played really well so far this year. I hope that when Starlin Castro comes to the plate this weekend, that they play his walk-up music from when he was a Cub. That has to happen. Has to happen. And the Cubs are pretty good about that stuff from a marketing standpoint, so my guess is that they will. I think it'll be a pretty good rest of the week. I mean, the Cubs are 4-6 at home so far as we record on Tuesday, May 2nd, so that's been a little weird. You know, hopefully they get back on track, because last year they were so good at Wrigley Field. They were so good everywhere, but they were really good at Wrigley Field. So we'll see if they can keep that up in 2017. But I think it's going to be a good week. I agree with you on that. I'm never going to pick them to have a horrible week. But I think it'd be important for the Cubs, at least in the context of the next couple of weeks, to play well in these next six at home, because you go to Colorado, then you go to St. Louis. Both of those series have challenges in them. So it would be certainly helpful for the Cubs to come out on the right foot the rest of this week. How do we find the podcast on Facebook, Brian Beto?
You can search for the B Squared Show and like the page. We post the podcast link every single time we do it, unless I randomly forget. But most of the time, I'm batting like 80. I'm batting like 800. I'd be more than a Hall of Famer if this was baseball. So give me credit for that.
I think you're doing a fantastic job. You can find us on Twitter. He's at Brian Beto. I'm at Jordan Bernfield. And you can also subscribe to our podcast both on Podomatic and on iTunes. And if you like our podcast, please leave a kind review. And if you hate our podcast, you can also rip away. But we hope you like our podcast. And we also hope
better. It's more compelling than a GarPax news conference taking place. So listen to us instead.
See, I'm glad that you mentioned it, because I was just going to go right through this podcast without mentioning it to just try not to rile you up, because I'm sure that you are just like really worried about this press conference tomorrow, because you're worried about just having it ruin your day. But at least the Bears didn't bid against themselves, trade three draft picks unnecessarily, and move up one spot to take a quarterback that started 13 games in college. So I'm sure.
I'm all in the Bears, baby. Let's go.
Wait, are you in on the Trubisky thing?
No, no, not really. But I'm yeah. It's such a fascinating story that I'm now all in. I love it. Go Mitchell. I hate that he was booed at the UC. That's the one thing that absolutely drives me absolutely insane.
Because horrible job.
That did nothing wrong. But yeah, let's boo him. But yeah, let's not get me riled up because we'll turn this into another hour.
Yeah, we'll end up breaking down. By the way, the fact that our podcast has had mentions of Mitchell Trubisky, Thomas Diamond.
Iowa Cubs All-Star Pacific Coast League 2010.
Yes, we also had references to Eric Karros' home run in 2003 against Roger Clemens. We've been all over the map today, and that is why our podcast is really something. I'll just put it that way. He's Brian Beto. I'm Jordan Bernfield. Thanks so much for listening. Hopefully the Cubs get back on track and we stop getting 30-degree weather and rain. Talk to you next week on the B-Squared Show.